Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. We've had some lovely emails in, as always, so thank you so much for getting in touch. Rachel sent us an email to say that she's heard us both say how much we like the graphic novel of Persepolis, which is true.
We do.
She says, but have we seen the film? And if so, what do we think of it? I haven't seen the film.
No, I haven't either. It was animated, wasn't it, to conform with what happened in the graphic novel.
It looks very, very similar to the graphic novel.
Yeah, I mean, I think Marjane Satrapi, who wrote the book, I think she was highly involved in it. So I think she supervised all the artwork if she didn't actually do it herself.
We should definitely watch that.
We should.
I don't know why we haven't already.
Yeah, let's do that. We've also heard from Lucy, who asks, did we like the end of 13? Which regular listeners will know, we talked about it a few weeks ago, BBC Three drama about a girl who was kidnapped and then released 13 years afterwards.
Yeah, I was only a couple of episodes into it when we were last discussing it, and now I'm all caught up. Are you?
Yes, same. So Lucy says she also binge-watched it after she heard us recommend it, and while she really liked most of it, she's not sure how she felt about the finale and wants to hear our thoughts. People still watching 13, cover your ears now, because here be spoilers.
Yeah, major spoilers coming.
I liked the plot of the ending. I liked where they took the story. She got kidnapped and then released again. And I liked how she was just released and then that was the end. You didn't get any of the kind of aftermath stuff that you did at the beginning of the series. But I wasn't sure about the melodrama of the fire and stuff.
Yeah, I think maybe I feel the same way as Lucy in that I'm just not really sure how I felt about that decision to recapture her. Because what I loved about this, which what we talked about before, was that the kidnapper was very much in the background and it was more about survival and how you, like, come back from an attack. And I couldn't decide what I thought about the decision to have her recaptured because on one hand, it's sort of like her worst nightmare playing out on screen and, like, all the anxieties her and her family have. Mm. And you have all these little moments throughout the series where she's sort of recaptured, so like another girl goes missing of a similar age when she first disappeared, and that's a sort of another capturing happening all over again, and then the dad of that girl sort of grabs her in the street at night outside her house, and that's almost like another kidnapping. So you get all this anxiety is constantly building that she's in danger of being captured again. But then when they actually did it, I just found it a bit indulgent almost. And the bit I really had a problem with was when she's back in his control and the kidnapper is saying to her, oh, you have to get undressed now.
Starts
slowly taking her clothes off and you're a bit like, who is this serving? Why are we watching this? This feels a bit like unnecessarily titillating, and his sort of creepiness was very in your face and it was all quite violent, and I was a bit like, well, this is horrible. But it's just horrible, and it might be an accurate representation, it might not be of what it would be like to be in that situation, but kind of either way I was a bit like, why do we need to see it when they'd done so well with us not seeing it?
Yes, I agree with that. You're right. What we liked about it in the first few episodes was the fact that it foregrounded Ivy's experience after she escaped, her new life, not what happened in the thing. But it was very dramatic. It was, I think, for seeing that kind of stuff close up, it was okay.
Yeah, I think it could have been worse, and I think it was an interesting decision, and I don't know how else they could have ended it really without that happening, because that was sort of the logical conclusion, because it was what the kidnapper wanted to do and he was sort of set on doing it somehow. But just some moments made me feel a little uncomfortable, so a mixed feeling things for me.
Yes, my enthusiasm for 13 kind of waned between the fourth and fifth episodes, I think.
Yeah, though I fancied Elliot and would watch him in something else immediately.
Oh, so much. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that actually one of my frustrations about the ending was the fact that I really want to know if like him and Lisa do actually get together.
Yeah. How does it work?
How does it work out? Is she going to be okay? Like,
I don't know.
I know you're not supposed to like ship minor characters in the background, but that is how I felt.
So another email we've had in from Candy, who said that she wanted to just email in to say she loves the podcast, but especially the last episode covering friendship, which was kind of a little off-piste for us, wasn't it? She says, "My best friend and I have grown up with a number of cultural differences, and while that was never a problem when we were growing up, apart from when we couldn't really have sleepovers and go clubbing when we were 18, strict parents, what can you do? It is making an unexpected difference when I find that I can't really rant to her about the patriarchy or systemic racism in the workplace. But after listening yesterday, I called her and we had a really nice chat, so thank you," which is lovely.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, it's nice to think that friends are reconnecting, and it's always difficult in relationships when you're like, my experience in the world is very different to yours.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's really difficult, but I think it is possible, so that's cool. Thanks, Candy. One great big circle of warm, huggy ladyness.
Yep. So, yeah, anyone else who liked the female friendship stuff should probably check her book out, Beautiful Broken Things.
Yeah, brilliant. The next thing we're going to talk about, much anticipated.
Yes, a few people on Twitter got in touch to ask if we were going to do this. Of course we were going to do this.
You knew we were going to do it. The next thing we're going to talk about is Zayn of our hearts fame. Zayn of One Direction fame. So Mind of Mine is the debut solo album from former One Direction member Zayn Malik, featuring a track list riddled with random capitalization. It is really weird if you've seen the album cover. And titles like Pillow Talk, She, Rear View, and TIO, which stands for Take It Off. The album sees Zayn announce to the world, "I too have had sex." So that's basically all you need to know about this album going in, I'd say.
And that it's kind of more smooth R&B than One Direction's pop, I
yeah,
would say.
Definitely. Yeah. It's kind of, I think the sort of heartbeat of this album is still pop.
Yeah.
I would say.
And my favourite tracks are the poppiest ones.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
Slightly unusually for a pop star, though actually, as time goes on, this is becoming less and less unusual for pop stars. It's sort of like a few bangers and then a few like more sort of moody, atmospheric album tracks. And then there's these sort of little, almost instrumental interludes and introductions and stuff. So it starts with one of those called Mind of Mind. Note the extra D to the album title, Mind of Mind. It's a bit like that teenage girl TV series intro where it's like, "Welcome to my world." That's basically what the Mind of Mind intro is. It's just Zayn being like, "Hi, welcome to my mind." You're like, okay, Zayn. And then it all gets more poppy from the beginning, would you say? Mm. The first sort of four tracks are like the lead singles, basically, off the album.
Yeah, but Pillow Talk definitely is quite poppy.
Yeah, and then we have It's You, which is a sort of ballady one that he released before. And then Before, which is the current single, I think, which is pretty poppy. But then and She, which I found like brilliant. She puts her spirit in the nightcap. She always knows where the crowd's at. She puts her mouth by a cigarette. And really, really poppy.
Yeah, it's a really good song.
I really like that one. But then there are some weirder ones, aren't there, as well?
Yeah, there's one that's in Urdu.
Yeah, so that's called Intermission : Flower, which I listened to on repeat for about 2 hours, twice. Once on the train when I was reading, and I didn't really want to sort of be distracted by the bigger melodies on the album, so I just had that going round and round in my head for about 2 hours. And then a second time in the bath with a glass of wine, which I would really recommend.
That sounds really nice.
Yeah.
I have to try that.
100% recommend that. And And I'm also a real fan of Borders and Truth, which have a similar sort of atmospheric, more low-key vibe to them.
Yeah, it's a really strange album, actually. It's not at all what I expected. Zayn's kind of departure from One Direction, going solo, announcement of his creative intent to be.
Mm.
Maybe I'm naive, but it doesn't feel very managed.
Yeah, I think it is slightly all over the place, isn't it? But maybe in a good way?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely pro that, but I sort of had assumed that, you know, one-fifth of such a famous pop group would not be able to get away with releasing an album with random capitals and one song in a language that lots of his fans don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, his management would be like, no, Zayn, that's for the third album, you know, or something, I don't know. But yeah, he's done it and it's brilliant. And I think I'm right in saying this. So this is a number one album in the UK, which is not something that One Direction have ever had.
Oh, I'm not sure about that, actually. I don't know.
Oh, I read somewhere that, or maybe it's the single. They've never had a number one single.
Yes, I think maybe What Makes You Beautiful is like number two or something, yeah. But I don't think they did get a number one UK. I mean, I'm not going to swear on my life about that. But
yeah, so, and he has with seemingly...
It's also number one in something like 71 countries, which is apparently some sort of record. So, I mean, he's smashing it.
Yeah,
well
he
done.
Really is. So yeah. It's kind of gone, for him, post One Direction has gone as well as it possibly could.
Mm.
Which is great, because hopefully, given that the music's been so successful, that will be what he gets to do and talk about now, rather than, why did you leave the band?
you know,
that kind of thing. Obviously, you know, the other boys are going to be doing their own projects in the not-too-distant future as well, so there'll inevitably be comparisons and all that kind of stuff.
He's obviously made a smart move by going out there first and being able to have a bit of independence.
Totally.
That's why he's produced sort of quite a fairly reflective of his personality, I think, album.
Yeah, it's kind of had mixed reviews from what I've seen from critics. I really love the Pitchfork review.
What did they give it?
They gave it 5.9, okay. I think.
It's not that bad.
Which is not that bad for Pitchfork at all. But some of the things that they said about his voice I thought were really, really weird. So they said that on his own, uninterrupted by other voices, Zayn's vocal can sound shapeless with his vowels collapsing into mumbled piles of feeling.
I mean, that doesn't make sense, but I kind of know what they mean.
Yeah, I think I do as well.
Because I think one of the things about Zayn as a vocalist in One Direction is that they sound like they've been taught how to sing by an X Factor vocal coach.
Yes. Who's
been like, don't forget to pronounce your consonants and keep that something sharp at the end or whatever. And then that Zayn comes in where he's like, I'm not really saying any words. And then goes away again. And it's quite like, ooh, the edgy one. Mm. And then on this, it all can become a little bit structureless at times, can't it?
Yeah, there's another great bit when it says, when he unleashes his falsetto, it pierces the track. A crystal tower rising through the surface of the earth.
Ooh, that's phallic.
Very phallic, which given the nature of the album kind of makes sense. I mean, I just love this as a way of writing about voices. Are we just allowed to say anything now? Can we just say,
yeah, let's.
Warm like chili? Like, whatever.
Maybe we should.
But yeah, so I love this Pitchfork review, even though it makes no sense. We should, I think, tackle the subject matter of this album.
Zayn's had sex.
Zayn's had sex, and he wants the world to know.
Yeah, I sometimes, when I listen to this album, I feel like it hurts me in a place of my heart. Like, I find it really cringeworthy in those moments where he sings about sex in a certain way, because there's a lyric, and I'm really paraphrasing here, so don't shoot me for this, Zayn fans, but he says something like, I'll get her wetter than ever. She likes it when I'm messy. I like her because she's a freak or something. And I'm like, I bet you just have the most boring missionary sex ever. Like, they think they're really crazy and you're like, oh, I can just tell. I don't know how, but I can just tell that you are not having interesting sex at all. It makes me, like, want to die. I can't bear it.
Because people who are don't sing about it.
And they don't say things like, yeah, she's a freak because she gets really wet. You're like, okay, I don't know what you're saying. Like, that doesn't make sense. You're weird. I can't bear it. You're just having boring sex. Just admit it. It's fine. You don't have to make this song and dance about how it's interesting just because she, like, has bodily functions.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think there's a part of his calculation that is like, you know, One Direction grew up as a band, but they still weren't like raunchy at any point, were they? They had a very kind of clean image.
Yeah.
That he was like, I'm not in that band anymore. This is all my sex material I've been holding back.
Yeah. I was just using all this in the bedroom, but now you guys can have it too. Yeah, I think that's what's happened. And also, yeah, it's just really funny because there are also lots of very veiled digs about the man and not wanting to be controlled anymore and like needing to be free. You can just tell that he had a lot of feelings. He was like, guys, I've got my journal. I'm going to like get all my feelings out now I'm out of this band. Would you rather stick on this album or a One Direction album, do you think?
Probably this one.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
I think there are two like sides to the coin for me, because I think I like sort of the production and the atmosphere on this album. Mm. I like It's produced by Frank Ocean's producer, and I think you can tell if you've listened to the Frank Ocean album. And so I like that. So, I think Trains and the Bath, this is great. But none of the songs on this album really moved me. And I know it sounds stupid to be like, One Direction songs sometimes move me. But, like, they make me really feel, like, excited and, like...
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't get that feeling from any of this, which I totally do from some One Direction songs.
Yeah.
But I think as a 45 minutes worth of music, as a whole album, as wanky reviewers say, I prefer this.
I agree.
I think One Direction make better singles.
Definitely.
But I think so far Zayn's made a better album.
I would like to see him release a different single from this album, because all the ones he's released so far I haven't like really been enamoured with at all. I wasn't the biggest fan of Pillow Talk or Before or It's You or Like I Would. They're all like fine to me. I'd quite like him to release like She or Truth or Borders or even Wrong, the one with Kalani on it, which I really liked. That would be more exciting, I think, from Zayn.
Have you seen any explanation of why some of the letters are randomly capitalized?
No. Other than like Zayn was really into that 2004 MS Then aesthetic. That's like as far as I've got with my extensive research into this topic.
Now we're going to talk about Zootropolis, which for the avoidance of confusion is called Zootopia in the US and is titled other things in other territories, but in the UK it's Zootropolis. It's a Disney animated film set in a world where animals have evolved to be city-dwelling, clothes-wearing citizens. It follows Judy, Zootropolis's first rabbit police officer, and her unlikely crime-solving partnership with the fox Nick Wilde, who is voiced by Jason Bateman.
Zootropolis, a gleaming city where animals of all breeds, predator and prey alike, live together in peace and harmony.
Hi, I'm Judy, your new neighbor.
Yeah, well, we're loud.
Don't expect us to apologize for it.
ZPD's first rabbit officer, Judy Hopps.
You ready to make the world a better place?
I really like that the fox is called Nicholas P. Wilde. He's P. Wilde, guys. It's confusing, the name thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear a presentation from a marketing person as to why they felt British people would not be able to handle the phrase Zootopia.
What's it called in China? That was my favourite one.
Crazy Animal City.
Crazy Animal City.
Obviously in Mandarin, whatever, but that's what it translates as.
I love that so much. Yeah, I would really like to read sort of like an 8,000 word essay describing what the significance is of the two titles and how it would change your viewing experience to go in and see Zootopia and Zootropolis, because the two words kind of mean very different things, right?
They do, and I actually prefer Zootopia, the American title. Yes, because I feel like that immediately gives you a sense of the political aims
of
Zootropolis.
Or is it called Zootopia in the film? What's the city?
No, the city's called Zootropolis in the film as well.
But of course, Zootopia, it is not.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know.
Make you think. But yeah, anyway, I think the American title sets that up sooner, and that's interesting.
And there's more irony at play.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Which is clearly what Disney are going for with the release of what I believe is their 55th animated feature film.
Wow. I want to go straight in and say I loved this film.
Yeah, me too.
I thought it was so funny. So clever. Lot of messages.
Lot of messages. It gave me lots of feelings about multiculturalism.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of stuff about, you know, the hierarchy and overlapping oppressions. And I thought it was really, really clever. So basically we start off with our like little bouncing bunny, Judy Hopps, who is like at school and like a little baby bunny and like getting bullied by the other bigger, more aggressive, predatory animals.
Because the thing about this society is that animals all live together in harmony. There's no predator or prey anymore, and everyone can be friends.
Animals do not eat each other.
Yes.
So yeah, she gets bullied by like a bigger fox, and she's like upset about it, but she's like, I'm going to achieve my dreams of becoming a police officer, even if the fox bully says I can't. And then she does. We like, there's a great training montage, which I really enjoyed, of her like sort of in a Mulan style, like, you know, going over some climbing walls and like obstacle courses and just, you know, being a bunny cop, and it was great. And then she gets to the big city, leaves her family behind, gets to Zootropolis, and finds that being a police officer as a rabbit is really hard. And there's a really great scene where she, like, it's her first day and she's all excited and she, like, goes into the room and Idris Elba plays this, like, big bison kind of.
Who's the police chief,
yeah. And he's like, we've had some new recruits today. and we don't care about them, so I'm not going to name them. It's a very, like, macho atmosphere, and all the animals are really big, and she's really little. She's, like, a feminine animal, and they're all really masculine. So, for me, that was the moment that was sort of the feminism angle.
Yeah.
And then as it goes on, the easy comparison becomes a lot more sort of race-based, I'd say. But, obviously, it's ridiculous to try and map the prejudices of this animal world exactly onto our own, because they don't quite match. But it is definitely where that exploration of, like, ooh, our stereotypes about other species are harmful to our multicultural city start to come in.
Yeah, well, so because the political sort of dichotomy that gets set up is the predator-prey one,
mm-hmm.
that there's something nasty going on where previously totally upstanding citizens of Zootropolis who happen to be from the kind of predator class of animal suddenly go savage and hurt people, hurt other animals. We learn that about 1 in 10 animals in Zootropolis is a predator, and the political hierarchy, the mayor and stuff, is freaking out because our whole society is built on the fact that we can live together in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
If 9 out of 10 citizens worry that they're going to be attacked by their own neighbours, what does that mean for how we live?
Exactly. And there's also lots of other sort of smaller, like, stereotypes, but, like, between species and stuff. So one of the first characters Judy meets in Zootropolis is a fox. Her rabbit parents have given her fox repellent spray to take with her, and they're like, don't trust foxes. And then she obviously meets this fox, and she's really surprised, and he's, like, a really nice guy, and she, like, really patronisingly tells him that he's really articulate. And there's lots of little moments in this film like that that you can, like, map on to quite specific analogies.
I thought that, actually, when... So, the deputy mayor, voiced by Jenny Slate of Obvious Child...
Who's, like, a lamb.
Yeah, who's,
a
like,
sheep.
A sort of small you, I suppose.
Mm.
She's helping them with something at the computer, and the fox just, like, touches her hair.
Yeah, yeah, that's another really good one.
Which is another really good one.
These sort of microaggressions between species that you could map on to sort of microaggressions about gender or race in our society.
Yeah, exactly.
She's really surprised to see that this fox is a good guy and, like, stands up for him in this really patronising way in a shop, and then it's revealed that actually he is a, quote, sly fox and is, like, scamming on the side, really enjoying his, like, scam lifestyle. Mm. And then she kind of becomes mates with him as she realises that in that sort of classic way he's, like, the criminal who could, like, help her with her police activities. In befriending him, she obviously realises that all her stereotypes are kind of stupid, and that he might behave in a certain way because people expect him to behave a certain way.
Well, he sort of says that, doesn't he? He says, if people think you're just a sly fox, why bother trying to be anything else?
Yeah.
One thing I really loved about the world of the city, incidentally, is the fact that it has totally different climactic zones.
Yeah, so it's like segregated into districts.
But kind of in an awesome way, because it's so that all the animals can live in a habitat that they're comfortable in.
Yeah.
So there's, like, tundra land and
rainforest zone
and Sahara city and, like, all the different...
And then there's, like, small rodentville where everything is tiny.
Everything is tiny and all the houses are, like, up to the fox's knees, you know.
Yeah. And then there's, like, lots of smaller jokes, like they go to the DUV?
DMV.
DMV.
Place where you get a driving license, yeah.
They go to the DMV and it's totally staffed by sloths and they're all, like, so slow. This was one of the funniest bits of the movie for me. The scene where, like, the sloth is, like, trying to trace a license plate for them and he's doing it so slowly, and it's just, you can't articulate why it's so funny. You have to see it.
Are you saying that because he's a sloth, he can't be fast?
Flash, flash, 100-yard dash.
Buddy, it's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Officer Judy Hopps, CPD, how are you?
I am doing...
fine?
Well, what...
hang in there.
...can I do...
well, I was hoping you could run a...
...for you...
well, I was hoping you
today.
Could...
today.
But it's just brilliant.
Oh, and the slow motion facial expressions.
Yeah, exactly. That's the amazing. Best bit.
Like, the fox tells him a joke, and then you get, like, full 5 seconds of, like, slow motion feature movement into smile.
It's
brilliant.
So funny.
It's really good.
The best of all children's films are obviously the ones that both children and adults can enjoy in equal measure. So there'll be, like, a really silly, like, slapstick bit of humour that the kids will really laugh out loud at, and then there'll be a Godfather reference for the grown-ups, and, like, everyone will be, like, cracking up at the Godfather references, which I loved.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there with, like, Finding Nemo in that way.
Yeah.
You know, the gangster stuff is really... I love that. So the gangsters are all... what are they?
Polar bears?
No, they're rats.
Oh, so he's all his henchmen are, like, polar bears.
Polar bears.
And then the big reveal is, like, the polar bears are walking in and they're getting bigger and bigger, and he's like, is that Mr. Big? Is that Mr. Big? And then, like, the biggest polar bear of all comes in and like stretches out his hand, and there's just like a small vole sat in the palm of his hand, and he's like in an armchair, like that sort of Fox's Biscuit gangster.
Yeah.
You disrespect me on the day of my daughter's wedding. He's like tiny. It's so funny.
That is excellent.
One of my favourite bits that I was like laughing out loud at in the whole film, my favourite joke in all of Frozen, which like made me cry with laughter when I saw it, is the mayor keep calling Weaselton, and then he like will snap at them, Weaselton, it's Weaselton, and he like looks just like a weasel, and it made me laugh so much in Frozen. And then in this film they like come across a weasel and they call him Mr. Weaselton, and he's like, it's Weaselton.
Yeah, that was really good.
Which made me laugh loads. So it was like full of little joys for me. I found the whole thing just like a complete joy to watch, and like really smart and brilliant.
Yeah, and like I loved the running thread about, so the biggest pop star in Zootropolis is called Gazelle.
Yeah.
And the receptionist at the police department, who is a cheetah, is obsessed with her. And he's got this app where it like looks like you're dancing with Gazelle. And so at various so times in the film, he's like makes other people do this, showing people this. And then the whole film ends with like a massive Gazelle concert.
I know. When I was watching this, my boyfriend turned to me in the cinema and was like, you know, they filmed this at an actual Gazelle concert. I was like, great, good one. But yeah, I loved all that. It was really funny.
Yeah, it's such a textured world. And whilst, and like 90% of me was like, this is making this film amazing. The fact that this world feels so fully realised.
Yeah, like the back of her phone will be like a carrot with a bite out of it instead of an apple. Like all these little
exactly,
things.
Exactly, all these touches are so, so brilliant. About 10% of me was like, they've just done this for the merchandising opportunities.
Maybe, yeah.
And for the spin-offs and the sequels. But, you know, when a film is excellent, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. So I would recommend that you all go see it and think deeply about structural oppression.
And also just have 2 hours of pure joy. But, I mean, who could ask for more? You can have both.
Exactly.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget? Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Loved it.
And Gazelle, welcome to Zootopia.
I messed up tonight. I lost another fight. I still messed up, but I'll just start again. I keep falling down.
So last episode, I recommended Anna the novel The Magicians, which is the first book in a trilogy by Lev Grossman. It follows the character Quentin Coldwater, a high school student from Brooklyn who attends a magical university in upstate New York. It's been called Harry Potter for grown-ups, and Grossman himself writes Harry Potter fan fiction mostly for his daughter, who is called Lily.
Oh, that sounds like another Lily and father.
I know.
Harry Potter reading team we know.
I think this is a... Yeah, from the Potter and Daughter podcast.
Yeah.
I think this is a trend, you know, that guys who either grew up reading Harry Potter or were really into it at the time it came out
are
now old
Lily.
Enough to have children that they name Lily.
That's so funny. It's funny that she is the one I guess yeah. Hermione, maybe it's just because it's such an overly complicated name and Lily's a more sort of normal muggle name.
So yeah, Anna, what did you make of the Magicians?
The Magicians, I find the Harry Potter comparison funny because one thing that the Magicians made me realise about Harry Potter is how incredibly tightly structured Harry Potter is.
Mm.
So the Magicians is sort of like, I can see why people call it Harry Potter for grown-ups because it's set in college. So they're all teenagers when the novel begins, so there's a bit more, like, chat about, like, sex and stuff. I remember when I started reading it and the word penis was on, like, page 4 and I was like, ooh, this is how it's gonna be, is it? They go through the entire college experience, so they're there for, like, 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years, I think it is,
and
yeah.
then they have, like, a year out, and then it's like, it spans a huge amount of time, this book.
Yeah.
Whereas the Harry Potter ones, it's so time passes in a very orderly fashion. It, even though the books get longer and stuff, time passes at the same rate, it feels like, throughout the Harry
Potter
series. Because
she pegged it to the school year, so there are certain events that are in every book, like Christmas is in every book, exams are in every book.
Halloween is often there, like, it feels like...
It feels regulated.
Yeah, and familiar, and it's sort of, like, a very good way to sort of just, like, hang all the broader plot points on, that you've got these, like, really set structures in each book.
Even, have you seen that picture? I think J.K. Rowling tweeted it or something at some point, of the, like, grid she made of the 7 books.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was really interesting. And, like, down the side she had, like, books 1 through 7. And then across the top she had, like, Quidditch matches. Feasts.
Yeah,
she
had, you can tell
she had all of
that.
The like major events, and then where the two met, she'd like write the details of like, what is the Halloween feast in book 2, and she'd write, you know.
That's so cool. So it's like she's built this like really structured clothes horse and just thrown this like big magical cape over it, whereas when reading The Magicians you're just like sort of going through this whole like maze of fabric and you don't really know where it's where it begins or ends. And I think, for me, I prefer the sort of orderly Harry Potter approach to these things. So I became really obsessed with time when I was reading it, because time is sort of a big figure in The Magicians, right?
Yes.
It's like a big presence. So one of the first things we learn is when we get to Breakbills, which is the name of the school, of the college, so the sort of college version of Hogwarts, if you will, in this, he quickly realises the calendar's off. So it's really warm, even though it was really cold in Brooklyn, where he's from. He's obsessed with these stories, which are a lot like Narnia, before he even realizes that like Breakbills and magic and stuff exist. The villain of those books is called like the Watchwoman or the Watcherwoman or something, and it's all about ticking clocks and time. And like the Narnia books, when the kids who are visiting the magical world get to a certain age, they're not allowed to be there anymore.
And while you're so in the Narnia equivalent in these books is called Fillory, and while you're in Fillory, it's as if no time passes in the real world. Yeah, you're right. The time is the
it's messy
underlying
and
theme.
Confusing, and like the whole way through. So sometimes I'd be like, am I really confused about how long he's been at this school, because it's a point. Quentin gets bumped up a year, and so he's a third year when he's actually only really been there like a year and a half. Mm. But in the text it said during his third year, like lowercase, it was his third year had begun, and I was like, wait, he hasn't been there 3 years, he's only been, and I was getting so confused, and I can't tell if this is like a technique of
or just
dear
a
old
bit
Levs,
sloppy.
Or just actually if it's all getting a bit out of hand, because so much happens so quickly.
So my favourite bit of the whole book is when they all get turned into geese and go
I
to
Antarctica.
I knew
you were going to say that. I don't know why. I just knew it. I was like, it's the geese. It's
I love
so
the
Caroline.
Geese.
They like literally, they get told to like go up to the roof naked. It reminded me of that, you know, that traumatizing scene in Pinocchio where everyone starts turning into donkeys.
Yeah.
They start like having horrible contortions and becoming these big geese. Yeah, and it is really, and then they like have to fly
and then
to
they
a
fly
different
all
school.
The, all the way to Antarctica to Breakbill South, and then they have to just be geese there for a while and other stuff. Like there's a whole outpost of the school and it's to like teach you to really focus your magic in Arctic conditions or whatever. Educationally, it's a bit suspect, but it was just so random. And
it
just,
is. But
just,
that so sums it up, the whole book as a whole. Because like, I remember reading it and being like, okay, wait, now they've been turned into foxes and they're having fox sex. What the hell am I reading? They're literally having fox sex and they're losing their virginity as foxes. I'm so confused. And like, sometimes there'll just be 2 paragraphs where if you blinked, you'd miss them. If you were like skim reading this book, you would miss them.
Mm.
Like, for example, he finishes, just before he graduates, there's like 2 paragraphs where he's like, also, he became an international welters champion.
Welters is the Quidditch equivalent, although it's sort of more like chess.
Yeah, and it's just like these 2 paragraphs where he's like, he travelled the world playing welters. First he went to this country. Ooh, chilly. Welters was bad. Then he went to this country. Very sunny. The welters game, he also lost that one. And then you're like, wait, what's the point of these 2 paragraphs just being like, by the way, Quentin became an international welters player? for some time.
I don't know.
It's so, I'm just, sometimes I'm like, Lev, you're just sat there at a computer like, blah, 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 blah. Now he's a welter's champion. Anyway, back to the whole time shit. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on.
But so the kind of, I think the main plot is about this small group of students that Quentin becomes friends with. And they stay friends after they've all graduated. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, you know, cool and outcasty and
a bit affected, know, pretentious.
And pretentious, and like, we don't care what we do, we'll just drink all day and do magic all night and no one will ever know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
they're kind of unbearable. And he, so by the end of Break Bills, Quentin is going out with Alice, a fellow student.
Mm.
And they sort of go and live with these people in New York, and they live this sort of devil may care lifestyle with them, and then it all goes to shit after that, really. Too complicated to try and explain here. If you are interested, you should read it. But what I wanted to ask you about was the Quentin-Alice relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I found Quentin an unbearable presence. I'm going to keep doing the annoying thing of comparing this to Harry Potter, but it didn't, I was like, ah, everyone always makes jokes about how Harry is annoying, but actually you have a deep love for Harry when you read the Harry Potter books.
And you know he's fundamentally decent. Yeah. That's kind of the point.
You're like, it's a bit like a brother or even like a child. You like love him so much, even though you're a bit like, Harry, being noble again. Quentin is like a misanthrope. And like,
yeah, he's a really horrible person.
Awful and like mean all the time. And I found that this like particularly comes across in his relationships with women. Again, part of me is like, is this a really surprisingly good portrayal of a misanthropic and sexist young man? Or is the author actually a bit sexist?
So a friend of a friend is actually friends with him and personally vouches for him.
Okay.
So I think he's trying to write a mean character.
Well, it's very accurate then, because...
And I think that's part of his whole, like, Harry Potter for grown-ups thing, is that in Harry Potter for grown-ups, Harry would be a dick.
And no, but also no one's bad in Harry Potter, really. Obviously, you have the evil people and you have the good people, and you don't really have anything in between, whereas a lot of these characters...
Well, you do. It's Mundungus Fletcher.
Yeah, that's it. And even then you're just like, well, you're just a bad, bad guy. Yeah. But like, all these characters are sort of something in between. So there's this great bit where there's this character in it called Amanda Orloff, who's sort of in the background, but like becomes a figure that they return to often. There's a moment in a classroom where she like helps him out of a humiliating situation. And he says he would have run back to where she was sitting and kissed her on her broad, unmoisturized forehead, which I just thought was like the most hilariously sexist description of a forehead you could ever have. And as we talked about the goose thing, Alice is a goose for several months, flying to Breakbill South, and after she loses loads of weight, Quentin looks at her and says, she looked lovely and gaunt and lost. And you're like, ugh, Quentin, you creep, you're absolute creep. And yeah, he's just awful about all the women around him all the time. So although I quite liked the Alice-Quentin relationship, I was a bit like, Alice, you can do better than this guy. She's like amazing, a really great character. The plot often is like, Quentin felt sorry for Alice, he wanted to protect her. Alice does really badass thing. Quentin vowed again to never underestimate Alice. Repeat.
Yeah, that like, is kind of how it works. He just does that loads. Yeah. Yeah, there are definite, like, Quentin is not likeable. There are definite problems with this book. But what I do really, really like about it is the sort of magic in the world. Some of that is so interesting.
Yeah.
Like the fact that, unlike, I think, in Harry Potter, magic in this world is really difficult and really academic, and you have to, in order to be able to work a spell, you have to learn all of the possible physical conditions in which the spell might have to happen and how it might be different for all those things and memorize them all.
Yeah.
And that's really hard.
It's a bit like, and there is a lot of talk about sort of the importance of languages in this, but it's a bit like, I imagine, learning cases, like you have to know how the word would look in all its different cases, but once you become proficient enough at the language, you become sort of intuitive and you sort of know what a new word would look like.
You don't
like
have
in different
to
cases.
Recite all the declensions to be able to do it.
You sort of instinctively would be like, oh well, that's that word would look like this. So
although
they do have to learn all these different conditions, there's also a level of talent involved where they have to be like, ah well, it's slightly damp, so I'll just put this sort of edge on it.
And I like the sort of Hogwartsy type details about the school. So like, I really like that in the library no one can ever find any books whatsoever, and some of the books have kind of gone feral because ages ago someone thought it'd be a really good idea if you enchanted all the books so that they flew and so that you could just like summon a book and it would fly to you. Apart from what happened is the books all decided to reshelve themselves and some of them have just become hunting packs of books.
The other thing I felt really strongly though was that, as we said, these characters are a bit more complex and darker and a bit less likeable than sort of young adult fantasy characters. And I think through a lot of this, I was like, yeah, these characters really love magic. they're not really into it for noble reasons, no. In the same way that Harry Potter characters are. So, like, you learn so quickly when you read Harry Potter that, like, magic is a thing, but it's not the most important thing. Like, the most important thing is being a good person and, like, looking after your friends and stuff like that. Whereas in this, the whole time, you're a bit like, I never really know what their motives are for, like, doing certain things and, like, trying to achieve certain levels of magic. It always seems like they're doing it for power.
Mm.
And you never really... I feel like if these characters were in Harry Potter, they could quite easily become Voldemort, like, quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah. The whole book is full of potential Voldemorts.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really interesting. It's just, like people have said, it's different, it's darker, and it's a little bit more adult.
Yeah, I haven't read the second and third books in the trilogy, although I am meaning to. I'm sort of waiting for the next time I'm on holiday. I feel like it's that kind of read. But
I think you do need a bit of time to get into these books.
I would be interested to hear from any listeners who have, actually, and whether anything we've said is then addressed or redressed in what happens next.
Yeah, it was interesting, but I do think overall I was like, wow, this has just made me all the more aware of all the many reasons why I just think Harry Potter is, like, the best thing in the world. Yeah. I just think it's amazing.
So, yeah, interesting read. Maybe not a total recommendation, but...
definitely one to check out, especially if fantasy is, like, your area. So, Caroline, for next week, we're going to crash back down to Earth. I was going to recommend you Luther, which has been on TV since, like, 2010, but something that I only really recently started watching, and I've just binged my way through the whole first three seasons in, like, a month. So I would recommend that you do the same.
Okay. I'll see how I can get on in a week.
Yeah. So watch the first one. That's what I'm going to recommend you. Let's start slow. So it's like I want to say it's like your standard sort of crime, detective-y mystery drama, but it's a little bit more interesting than that. And especially I think this first episode is, because there's just like a lot of fun elements to this, and you get introduced to characters that stay with you for a long time.
And I'm interested particularly to see the first episode, because it's kind of Idris Elba before he was famous, really.
I guess so, yeah. I don't actually know that much about the trajectory of his career, but I do think this was his, like, big breakout role.
It was his, like,
big
breakout role, so...
yeah. Yeah, and he is excellent. He's so watchable, he's so handsome, and he just plays the character really, really well. The second lead in this is Ruth Wilson. Have you seen her in stuff? I love her, and I think she's amazing in this. And you get introduced to all the many difficult aspects of her character in the first episode, so I'm really excited to see what you think.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks for listening to Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to Seriously. All you have to do is search SRSLY in iTunes or any other podcasting app you use. While you're there, it would be really great if you could leave us an iTunes review, as it helps other people find the show.
We also rely on you listeners for your recommendations, so if you want to tell us what you thought about something, or if you've got something we should watch, you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, via email. All the details are on seriouslypodcast.com. If you like, you can also recommend us to your friends, family, neighbours, strangers. Let them know that you like the podcast and they should be listening to it too.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.